Now, one technology that Mark Jacobson relies on a lot is concentrated solar thermal power. Okay, as distinct from the solar systems, is producing electricity directly. This technology is thermal power, so it's using these collectors to concentrate the sun's heat. The sun's heat is stored in these molten salt tanks, and then it's like a big thermos, and so the heat's being generated during the day, stored in the tanks, and then it can be released during the night as the power is needed. So the heat is released, and that operates, and that runs turbines, which run generators, which produce electricity. And this is a really crucial thing, because one of the big plank of the carbon lobby is that we haven't got a replacement for baseload energy, but we do, and this is it. You can store the heat and you can release it at night, so it's 24-hour solar power, baseload solar power essentially. But it's kind of better than baseload, because the thing with baseload coal plants is they run flat out 24 hours a day. So they produce the same amount of electricity at 5 p.m. in the evening when you need it as they do at 3 in the morning when you don't need it. So a lot of that burning of coal is actually wasted and blown off its steam. This can be dispatched to produce electricity as you need it. There's a number of different types of technology. The one you saw before is parabolic trough systems. We think, our feeling is that the future of solar thermal power is probably tower systems. And there's a number of technical reasons that that's likely to happen. But one of the things is that they produce higher temperatures, and therefore you need less, you can store more energy in less salt, and you've got more energy stored, so you can be releasing it as you need the energy. So this plant is due to be completed next year in Spain. It's got 16 hours storage, and so that's a very exciting development on the road there. This is what it's going to look like when it's finished. And these are the kinds of plans that we incorporate into the work we've done in the Zero Carbon Australia 2020 plan. Spain is putting in a lot of these plants, a lot of concentrating solar power, because their government has, because they're interested in energy security as well as climate issues. And so you can see there's a whole bunch of plants around Spain. This is just a kind of a nice slide showing where they're located. And the really exciting thing is that they've got nearly 15,000 megawatts in the pipeline ready to be signed off on, so getting underway. And that's the equivalent to Victoria and New South Wales power. So this is serious projects coming up in Spain. At the moment, within the next 3 years, they're going to have, there's about 4,400 megawatts that will be finished, and these are the ones that are following it up. So enormous amounts. There's also enormous amounts of applications building up in the US as well, something like 97 gigawatts of applications to the Bureau of Land Management there. Just a quick look at a solar resource map of the world. Red is obviously a good solar resource. Blue is less of a solar resource. Spain is kind of yellow and blue. Australia's red. Spain has 15,000 megawatts in the pipeline. Australia has zero at this point. So in our plan, we talk about, we've worked it out to be that solar thermal power will provide 60% of our electricity by 2020. Now this, we talk about solar thermal power because we're really addressing the base load, the energy storage issue, but it's just a time limit here, but we would also incorporate solar systems-like technology, because that can produce on-sun power much more, well, probably more cheaply than the solar thermal plants. So what you can do is you can just provide your on-sun power with Mildura-type plants, and then you can devote more of your solar thermal capacity to storage and dispatch more energy. Skip that one. Sorry. That's the sort of stuff that keeps us up at night. So wind is also extremely important because wind is the most technologically mature. It's also the lowest cost renewable energy. So we think of that as first dispatch. You get as much into the grid as possible. And so you've got your low cost energy, and you build the rest of your grid around that in a sense. So we're talking about 10,000 6 megawatt turbines around Australia by 2020 to provide 40% of Australia's energy. One thing the Can't Do campaign, the Carbon Lobby Can't Do campaign, always talks about is, well, the wind stops blowing, so there's no power. Therefore, wind is useless unless you've got fossil fuel backup. That is a very simplistic reading of energy, because in fact there's a whole lot of ways to balance the grid and make sure you've got you can balance the grid and get a consistent electricity supply. Just for the purposes of this, we rely a lot on David Milgrove, who is a British grid expert and wind energy expert, and he's quoted there saying that up to 40% or more electricity can be provided by wind can be managed. 40% or more electricity consumption can be managed with quantifiable and modest variability costs. The other thing really worth looking at is the Danish grid, because the Danes have decided that by 2025, 50% of their power is going to come from wind. So the Danish grid operators have started a project called EcoGrid, which works out in detail how they're going to manage those variability issues. So they kind of take the opposite approach to Australia. In Australia, they would say, gee, that's really hard, so we won't do it, whereas the Danes work out, they decide to do it, and then figure out how it's going to be done. This is a map which just shows the spread of our solar and wind sites around Australia. We've also had to develop a plan for revamping the national grid, so interconnecting and making sure we've got the connections to bring the renewable energy from across Australia to make the most of the diversity of our renewable resources. We've had that checked over by SKM, the big engineering firm, and they've given it the tick, which is really fantastic too. So it's just another view of the transmission and generating capacity. We look at costs in quite a lot of detail, because everything we do has costs. Our cost for concentrating solar power from the US Department of Energy, double-checked by Sargent Lundy, which are the big international power consultants, build power stations all over the world. The take-home point here is that solar thermal, because it's starting from a really low base, is right up the top of the cost curve at the moment. The cost reduction curve, I should say, is quite steep. So as you put in more capacity, the price per kilowatt hour comes down quite sharply. And what they're saying in their report is that with 2.6 gigawatts, which is less than two Hazelwoods, the price of solar thermal comes down to about parity with wind and gas. And then if you add another 6,100 megawatts to bring it to a total of 8.7 gigawatts, so another, say, three Hazelwoods, the price of electricity produced by this technology should be around parity with coal, okay, with new coal power plants. And this is cumulative capacity in a single technology around the world. So there's enormous that has enormous implications for Australia and internationally, because you could get baseload solar power around the world at the same cost as new coal plants. We've just done it. We've worked in a bit of detail here, so the slides I've hidden are still coming up, so keep going, Matt. Sorry, I meant to hide all these, because it all goes into way too much detail. Keep going. So one thing, just to kind of make it all a bit more real, we're still working on our graphic design at this point, but hopefully I can make the point here. These are the kind of heliostats or mirrors that we're talking about putting in at our concentrated solar power plants. They're essentially a piece of glass about 1 metre squared. Every heliostat that is put in will contribute about the same amount of power as burning 20 tonnes of brown coal. So one way you can look at it is that if we choose not to put in those heliostats, every heliostat that we choose not to put in, we're making a decision to burn 20 tonnes of brown coal, which will put 72 tonnes, which I think, 72 tonnes of CO2 into the atmosphere. So I think we really need to, even if deciding to do nothing is a decision to do that. So that's just kind of multiplying it to show the effect with a single person's energy use. But keep going. We also look, in terms of the cost of all this, we look at, it's kind of, if you just look at the cost of installing all this renewable energy capacity and all the things you've got to do, if you look at it in isolation, it doesn't make much sense. So what you do is you look at the costs that you would have to pay anyway if you continued on the road to business as usual. So all the replacement of plant, increasing plant to reach new demand, fuel costs, operation management, etc., and the carbon price, and importantly, future oil importation costs. Okay, so we compare that with what we're doing, and when you look at it, all your operational management costs and your new plants and all that is about probably $500 billion under the business as usual scenario for the next. Running out to 2050. And then the carbon price is actually quite substantial over that time. Now, we've used very conservative assessments of the carbon price, but one thing's for sure, we will have a carbon price in Australia and it will keep going up. But the really big one is oil importation. So if we decide not to electrify our transport system, as Mark Jacobson is suggesting, and we're suggesting, and many other people are suggesting, we're going to be paying a lot of money for oil over the next few decades. So I think it's really well worth doing. So thank you.